From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, a handful of local restaurants are planning to get rid of tipping, opting instead for a 20% service charge that would be automatically included on the bill. The restaurant owners say it would help spread the revenue more evenly among waiters and cooks, while critics say it reduces the incentive to provide good service. We'll discuss it next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Due mainly to salary discrepancies and increased minimum wage requirements, five Bay Area restaurants in Berkeley, Oakland, and San Francisco are changing over to an automatic 20% added service charge to all bills. Some of those who favor the idea believe it should become standard practice, as it is in much of Europe, but others decry it, and in this opening hour of Forum, we want to take up the debate. Joining us in studio is Thad Volger. He's co-owner of Bar Agricole and True Norman. They are two San Francisco restaurants, and both of those restaurants are switching from tips to a required surcharge. Welcome, Thad Volger.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Good to have you here. Also good to have Louis Riviere with us by phone. He's a server and a bartender. He's been in the restaurant industry in both Los Angeles and in San Francisco for the past 20 years, and we welcome you to the program. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Also want to welcome Gwyneth Borden, who is with us this morning from Brooklyn. She's an executive director of the Golden Gate Restaurant Association, and welcome, Gwyneth Borden.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Also good to have, back on Forum, actually, Sara Jayaraman, who is the author of Behind the Kitchen Door. She's also co-founder and co-director of the Restaurant Opportunities Centers United and director of the Food Labor Research Center at University of California, Berkeley. And welcome back to Forum. Good to have you.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Let me begin, Thad Volger, with you. And I said this is largely, I suppose, as far as a catalyst for you doing this, the minimum wage change and discrepancies in pay. Discrepancies, I should say, between the front, those who are serving and busing and so forth, and the back, those who are cooking and dishwashing.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. There has been talk of a $15 minimum wage in San Francisco. It seems sort of inevitable. I was surprised to see that. I had a gut reaction to that of, oh, no, as a small business owner. And as I sat with that, it seemed crazy that anyone would hesitate to guarantee a $15 minimum wage in San Francisco. I mean, even $15 is not sufficient to exist here. So I just realized it would be silly to wait for legal reasons to do that. And we as a group decided to commit to that now. I mean, the good news is we weren't that far away. And one of the, I wouldn't call it an obstacle, but one of the, one of the things that draws your attention to is the fact that by law, half of your employees are excluded from access to a tip pool. And that also seemed like something worth addressing.
No tipping sharing in California.
No, one of the main reasons we would make this switch or are making this switch is that it allows us to legally incentivize kitchen employees.
But what about the incentive for the waiters and the servers? I always recoil a little at that word, but they are indeed serving. And in fact, they to some extent feel the better they serve, the more income that they can generate in terms of gratuities, right?
True. I think statistics are dodgy at best, but in exploring a correlation between quality of service and amount of gratuity, no one's really been able to establish a statistical correlation. In fact, it's generally not the case that people tip in accordance with their experience that evening. What analyses show is that some people tip one way and others another. And that's pretty consistent from meal to meal.
But you often hear people say, I'm tipping on the basis of how well I was taken care of by my waiter. And from a tipper's point of view, this might be imposing something that takes away from that feeling of discretion and agency.
I totally agree. I think every decision has its opportunity costs. And as someone that's worked in the industry and loves going to restaurants, there's a part of me that's sad to see that aspect go. It's a sort of fun way for the customer to weigh in. It's a collaboration between customer and employee or restaurant owner, definitely. It's like the theater. Fortunately, there's plenty of other opportunities in this day and age for people to weigh in on their opinions about restaurants and any other matters.
But why move toward this? What is the big positive in this?
There's a number of reasons. One, there's long been a sort – it's been unfortunate that the kitchen is excluded from this portion of revenue. So a kitchen employee on a Monday, we do 100 people, makes the same as on a Saturday where you do 250 people. The kitchen is excluded from the excitement of selling more, the profitability of selling more, you know, the financial benefit of selling more. It just seems it's long seemed to a lot of us unfair to exclude systematically a big part of your house from that reservoir of money. We don't want to exclude the front of the house from that incentive. We just want to broaden the incentive to allow kitchen employees to benefit. Another thing is that, you know, restaurants, I mean, part of the charm of restaurants is they've long been sort of lawless institutions with two sets of books. And, you know, there's a lot of gray market economy that surrounds the restaurants. And as a small business owner, you don't really want to be a part of it. There's a whole lot of tax that's not getting paid on the tip pool by tipped employees and also by business owners that are avoiding paying payroll tax by not accounting for all gratuity that's received. I mean, this is public radio, obviously, benefits from tax revenue. And as business owners, there's a thing that it's sort of nice to clean up your books in that way and do everything above board and fully transparently.
Well, let me bring – this is Thad Volger, by the way. We're talking to co-owner of Bar Agricole and True Norman, two San Francisco restaurants which are shifting to a required surge charge in lieu of tips. Louis Riviere is a server and bartender. He's been in the restaurant industry for 20 years, both in San Francisco and Los Angeles. And Louis, I think it's you who pointed out to me that tips often stand for to ensure prompt service. You're going to not only perhaps diminish that, but also, from your perspective, lower the pay for most servers and bartenders and bussers?
I totally agree. I'm totally against the surcharge or service included service charge. I did work in a place in San Francisco that added a automatic 17% service charge, but they did leave another space for additional tip or gratuity if the customer so desired to leave that feeling a little maybe that the server wasn't getting paid correctly. And on top of that, I feel that I always felt my back was against the wall with the service charge included because really the customer loses out. I feel the customer is already looking at every point to see if they're getting their 20% worth. But in the long run, with the 17% where I work, it came out to be about $400 to $500 a week just off the service charge. So that's looking at about 40 to 50% decrease in my salary of selling wine and serving people. And also wanted to address that we do tip out. The waiters do tip out. We tip out our hostess. We tip out our bartender. We tip out our food runner. We tip out our busser. It's a 35% minimum tip out at most places from the server to the server assistant staff.
So, yeah, but you got the people in the kitchen, and you've also got
people in the kitchen should be paid. If they're not paying them $15 an hour now, I mean, the only way they're going to get a decent wage in the kitchen is being forced, I guess, by a minimum wage.
What about the issue of transparency? I mean, that's already been raised by Thad Volger. There's a lot of money that's under the table that's not going to tax revenue that should be going to tax revenue. And that's not necessarily true in all restaurants, but it's probably true in a number of them and maybe even quite a few. Louis?
Was that to me?
Yeah, that's to you, yeah.
Well, I don't know how true that is nowadays. I probably have 95% of my customers pay with credit cards, so there's no hiding anything when everything's put on a credit card. You may go into the bartender aspect where you're making more cash tips. There could be some things that are less less declared on that. But to be talking about that, what if you're a bartender and you make 30 drinks and no food, but then you get a tip, and then you have to share that with the kitchen? It had nothing to do with any of the work that you just did. So to me, I don't agree with that. And also one of the excuses I read was profit sharing. Well, I think I'd like to know a little more about that. And maybe you can include in healthcare, vision, dental, and vacation.
Well, let me actually ask you about that. There is a model in Philadelphia that often those who are in favor of this will put forward. It's called the Girard Brasserie and Buncheria. It's a place that used to pay $13 an hour, I believe, but now has service charge and really generous benefits and time off, health care, all that. If that were the case, and some of the high-end restaurants do have essentially this system, Chez Panisse, I believe, has it, or you have restaurants that say six or more and the tip is built in as a service charge, would that be more acceptable to you, or are you just against it outright?
I'm against sharing with the back of the house. I mean, there's a reason why there's a law, a California law, saying that you can't share tips with, well, you only share tips with people who are actually providing the service. So, I mean, I think it basically stems down, do you want to pay your back of the house what they're worth, you know, and that's why you're getting to the point of having a minimum wage at $15. I don't, you know, there's, if you think about union serving jobs, like in the hotels in San Francisco, they get like $15 an hour, even more, maybe a little less, but they also get it. They get their tips as well, you know, and that's why they have people that stay there for 20 years or stay there a lifetime. You know, that's where I'm not against that, but I doubt the transparency. I think that the transparency between the service charge and where it goes needs to be clear, and everybody needs to see that, because I've already been a victim to that somewhere else. You never knew what you're getting. You know, you would have $200 in service charge. You would hope to get $100 of that at least, but you know, from every other paycheck, it was different. So I never got a transparency in the place I worked at, where I had a 17% service charge that was shared with everyone, including the janitor.
Louis Riviere with us by phone, server and bartender, been in the restaurant industry for a couple of decades, both in San Francisco and Los Angeles. And I thank you for joining us. I want to invite listeners now, because this is a sort of subject that probably so many of you have strong opinions about, and you may want to weigh in, and let me give the phone number so you can do that. Our toll-free number, if you'd like to join this conversation or if you have questions or comments, is 866-733-6786. We do welcome your involvement in the program, so feel free to join us. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also email us. Email address is forum@kqed.org, or you can post questions or comments right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. I want to go to Gwyneth Borden now, who's in Brooklyn this morning, Executive Director of the Golden Gate Restaurant Association. And Gwyneth Borden, no official position or stance from your organization. Why is that?
I mean, in general, our goal is to help our restaurateurs be educated when they choose to make decisions about some of the opportunities and challenges. You know, it's funny because I'm actually here in New York at something called the Star Chefs Conference. It's an industry conference, and one of the topics for tomorrow is tipping, should it be banned? And it's a long-term issue, as many restaurants, as Fab was just talking about, are looking at higher overall costs of doing business, plus the fact that there's a huge disparity in what the front of the house and the back of the house makes. It is not unusual for someone who is a cook to make around $25,000 to $30,000 a year, while someone in the front of the house will make $60,000 a year. I understand, you know, the gentleman's, Luis's concern about making less money, but if you have a strong tipping policy instituted at a restaurant where it's very clear what percentage of tips various people were to get in an automatic gratuity world, then that could be very successful in raising the wages of the back of the house. By and large, restaurants in San Francisco are paying above the existing minimum wage. Right now, the going rate for back of the house is well in the high teens, and in some cases, the early 20s. There is actually a labor shortage. But still then, that's a lot different than making $60,000 a year. And so I think that, you know, we need to talk about a little bit of equity in the industry, and it's one of the challenges that can't easily be solved. Everyone knows that restaurants have very tight margins. Even with looking at going to automatic gratuity, there are implications for the restaurant owners. The federal law requires that if you do automatic gratuity, that's treated as revenue. It's not considered wages, so therefore you do pay all the workers' comp and all the other taxes that are associated with that. Also, what most people don't realize in most restaurants, the model for a lease includes a revenue sharing. It can be anywhere from 3 to 7 or 10% of the revenue, and that doesn't take out actual costs. So if you do institute an automatic gratuity policy, it could actually affect the revenue you have to provide to your landlord based upon the lease and what was negotiated in your lease previously. So, you know, what we're doing is really looking at, you know, the opportunities and challenges related to this and providing forms for our members to understand those so they can make the decisions that are best in their interest.
Well, there is some new data that suggests that not only has tipping gone below 20% for the most part, but the fact of the matter is that there's a lot of discrimination in tipping. Studies have shown that more attractive women, white people get better tips, for example, Caucasians. But we have a different culture here. I mean, I'd like to get your slant on this. The fact is that it's widespread with service charges in Europe and through other parts of the world, whereas here there almost seems to be a kind of, I should be able to tip what I want to tip, American individualism or something along those lines.
It's true, and it's interesting when you consider that in San Francisco we get 17 million tourists every single year. And it's funny because in those restaurants where there are high numbers of tourists, people will tell you that sometimes European tourists, because they're not used to tipping, don't tip very well. And in fact, in some of those places, they've gone to at the bottom of the check, indicating anywhere from 15 to 25%, you know, what the suggested tip amount might be. And is it fair because you happen to be working in a restaurant that has a high amount of tourists that you get a lower tip volume than in a restaurant where locals and people that are accustomed to tipping do well? I also want to go back to what Thad said earlier, is that there's not a lot of correlation necessarily with service and tipping. A lot of times people feel like they're a bad person if they don't tip well, even if the service wasn't great. Also, when people talk about a buzz of a restaurant, it's not like, oh, my God, they have amazing service. People are buzzing about the food and what experience they're going to have there. And everyone would say that if there were not people cooking food, there would be no reason for people to go to restaurants. So, I mean, I think that we have to think a little bigger in how we can help share the prosperity across the entire restaurant, knowing that people come because of great food and they stay because of great service. And so it's a symbiotic relationship that must be supported.
Isn't it axiomatic, though, that if you're going to have a service charge, you're probably going to have higher prices on the menu?
Not necessarily, because a service charge would take care of that in many cases. I mean, in some instances, I mean, there are higher prices because there are a lot of different fluctuations. Right now, we're in a drought. Food costs are very high. People also buy local sustainable agriculture, and based upon the drought, the influences of those sort of things impact the prices. I mean, I think it's really interesting. We live in a culture where big oil raises the gas price goes up and down every single day, and no one seems to question it. But in terms of restaurants, it's a little more complicated. People do have a sense in their mind of how much they should pay for a particular food item, and they are outraged if it's not the price that they think it should be. And in some ways, adding a service charge kind of gets away from the bias that people have in their mind about what a particular food item should cost. I mean, I think it's interesting because Jaru even talked about that in her book, Behind the Kitchen Door. She talks about a situation of a Vietnamese restaurateur who was selling higher quality product and paying their people well, but, you know, other places that were much less expensive were being kind of heralded. And so I think that there's people don't understand the cost of food or the cost of restaurants, and I think that there's a bias in some ways of how people perceive what prices should be.
We also, here in San Francisco, have a dearth of cooks and chefs, which we should mention as well, part of this calculus. But let me bring in Sara J. Rahman, who again is the author of Behind the Kitchen Door. And Sara, when you talk about San Francisco, you're talking about fairly high movement toward minimum wage and even what many call livable wage, but most states allow for far less than that. And, you know, in your book, you highlight really how impoverished many of these workers are, although there has to be a distinction, doesn't there, between, let's say, servers who are college students and the mothers of three who are working to make ends meet? Basic inequity there.
There absolutely does. But I think one thing that unites all of those types of workers is that they are professionals, and to me, that's the root of this whole conversation. In an ideal world, all of the professionals in this industry, from Lewis, who's on the phone, who is a true professional, to the cooks in the back, who are true professionals, would all receive a professional wage that remunerates them as the professionals that they are from their employer. In an ideal world, it would be as any other profession. You mentioned the theater. And every other customer-facing industry where there are professionals who are paid a professional wage with career ladders and career mobility by their employer. I think that's the bottom line here, is that maybe in an ideal world we could get to a place where workers are actually paid that professional wage, not a minimum wage, but a livable professional wage from their employer. Until we get to that day, I think Lewis is right. Tips are absolutely necessary until we get to that moment, because even as bad as $15 is not that moment.
Of course, forgive me, how do you determine, I'm sorry, I just wanted to ask you, how do you determine what a livable wage is? I mean, in San Francisco, a livable wage is very different than it is in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Yeah,
absolutely. That's why we have regional wages, and there are regional wage calculators. So MIT has a regional living wage calculator for San Francisco. A livable wage is far above $21 an hour. So we're not there yet. $15 is not a livable wage in San Francisco. There should be regional livable wages, and in the restaurant industry, as with other professions, employers should pay a professional wage. Until we get there, tips are absolutely necessary on top of whatever minimum wage is provided to get people closer to a professional wage. But here's the problem with that happening through a service charge. I think it's admirable. It's a really good thought. It's a really good idea. I really want to commend Chad and other employers who are trying to think carefully about equity and even just getting all of their employees to a livable wage. The problem with the service charge is that it is controlled completely by the employer, as opposed to tips, which by law are the property of workers. With the service charge, you know, the U.S. Department of Labor has reported an 83% violation rate with regard to employers illegally taking portions of tips or wages. If that were completely in the hands of the employer, you can see how, as Lewis described, you're going to see a much higher percentage of those charges going not to workers. I'm not saying this is bad or any of the employers who are doing it now, but
no, but you're saying it allows for abuse, basically.
That's right. There, industry-wide, there's certainly a culture of abuse. And that's not my words. The U.S. Department of Labor has actually said there's a culture of noncompliance with the law in this industry. The other thing I really have to point out is that this entire show has been talking about fine dining restaurants, and that is absolutely not where the majority of workers work, even in San Francisco. So the vast majority of restaurant workers, servers and back-of-house cooks, and work in casual restaurants, work in even chains like the Olive Gardens of the world, where actually the difference between back and front is not as big as it is in a fine dining restaurant. In fact, the median wage is only pennies apart in California between servers and cooks. It's actually only pennies apart, and you're talking about in the $9 and $10 range.
And forgive me, Sarah, because we're coming up on a break here, but I just want to get on the record. If you're looking industry wide and more generally, you have to also factor in the fact that there is a great deal of lack of mobility for workers of color.
For workers of color, there's a $4 wage gap between white workers and workers of color. And if we're talking about equity, which I'm so happy we are, we have to look at the fact that part of the reason this is even coming up is that there just isn't mobility for workers of color to move to these fine dining service positions, which needs to change, absolutely. But that doesn't mean that we need to detract in any way from what the fine dining servers are earning. What it does mean is that every worker in the industry of any color should have the opportunity to get to one of those jobs.
All right, we have to get to a break, but when we return, we'll hear from you, our listeners. Again, there are a number of ways of joining us. Toll-free number 866-733-6786 or email forum at kqed.org or go to our website kqed.org/forum and click on this segment. And you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at kqedforum. More when we return. We're talking, obviously, about restaurants replacing tipping with a 20% surcharge. And we'll have you weigh in. Hear your questions and comments. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A handful of local restaurants are planning to get rid of tipping, opting instead for a 20% service charge that would be automatically included on the bill. And the restaurant owners say it would help spread the revenue more evenly among waiters and cooks, while critics say it reduces the incentive to provide good service. We are talking with Thad Volger, who's here with us in studio, co-owner of Bar Agricole in True Normand, one of the restaurants that's involved in this move, which many are saying should become a national move. And both locations of the two restaurants that Thad is co-owner of are essentially switching from tips to a required service charge. We spoke earlier with Louis Riviere, who's a server and bartender who's been in the restaurant business for 20 years in both San Francisco and Los Angeles, and with us by phone From Brooklyn is Gwyneth Borden, who is Executive Director of the Golden Gate Restaurant Association, and with us also by phone is Saru Jayaramanan, who is the author of Behind the Kitchen Door and co-founder and co-director of the Restaurant Opportunities Center United, and she's also director of the Food Labor Research Center at University of California, Berkeley. Let's go right to your calls without tarrying, and we'll begin, Kate, with you. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm Kate Alfrink. I'm from Europe. I have a degree in hotel management, and I have a lot of experience working in restaurants in Switzerland and France and the Netherlands. And what bothers me in this discussion is that, first of all, I believe that everybody in the service industry should have a minimum wage with growing pay scales based on experience and everything. But what bothers me in this discussion is that the customer in the United States, when you go into the service industry, into a restaurant, is morally and ethically responsible for employers who refuse to pay their people a living wage. And I think that this is overlooked in the discussion. When I go somewhere to eat a salad, it's not my responsibility, but it's the employer's responsibility. And, you know, when you pay a 20% surcharge, when you have an expensive bottle of wine, which requires the same amount of labor to serve it, you have to pay infinitely more. So the 20% charge is really very unfair, in my opinion. That was my 2 cents.
I'm glad you gave your 2 cents. Thank you for that call. Actually, a lot of listeners are weighing in on Facebook. We asked listeners whether they prefer to tip or to pay the surcharge, and a lot of sentiments like Jeff's, who says neither. Raise prices 20% and pay all your staff a living wage. Let me go, actually, a few more of these Facebook comments. Chris says, I always leave 18 to 20%, but I will boycott restaurants that demand it. Steve says, I tip 20% or more usually, but I do feel that should be my choice. Restaurants should pay a living wage and not tell me what to do. I would still like to tip for good service and not for bad service. And Sherry writes, I very seldom experience bad service and think this is an excellent idea. So let's hear some more of our callers. Tammy, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, my name is Tammy, and I'm calling from Alameda. I work at a restaurant in Oakland, and I was calling in regards to what we actually get paid an hour. Well, we get paid, you know, a certain wage an hour, but then all our tips get taxed on that wage. So at the majority of the restaurants that I've worked at, we get a zero paycheck. So our tips are really what we're making for our race. And also my second comment was My second comment was that if you made it so it was kind of a standard that everybody had to pay a certain amount, I think the quality of service is really going to decrease because people aren't going to have to work and present themselves and sell things the way that they would if they knew they were working to get a good tip.
We thank you for the call. And Saru Jayaraman, let me just get you on record here. The situation she describes where she's making her income solely on tips is not uncommon throughout this country, is it?
No, unfortunately, this is the law of the land, and it relates to what your earlier caller said, which is that back in 1996, the National Restaurant Association, which is this huge and powerful trade lobby, managed to lobby Congress to keep the wage at $2.13 an hour for tipped workers. That actually is the federal minimum wage for workers who earn tips in the United States. And it results in incredibly low wages for tipped workers across the board, although California is one of 7 states that doesn't partake in this horrible system of paying tipped workers less. You can see that it drives wages down universally, nationally, the fact that the Restaurant Association has essentially gotten away with being the only industry on earth to argue, to lobby and win the argument that they should not have to pay their own workers' wages because you, the customers, should pay their workers' wages for them. And interestingly, to your last caller, their argument as to why it shouldn't go up from $2.13 an hour is that service will be horrible, tipping will end as we know it, And the service will be horrible when workers actually receive a wage, even a legitimate wage, not $2.13 an hour, which I find interesting because California has always paid the same wage to tipped and non-tipped workers of about $8 or $9 an hour. And I think most San Franciscans would be really upset to hear people saying in Washington, D.C., where the wage is $2.77 an hour, well, if we move to a California system, service would be so much worse. You would be hard-pressed to say that service is much worse in San Francisco than it is in Washington, D.C. So it is universally the problem that people are living off their tips And actually, we just put out a report saying that that system of, especially women, because it's 70% women in the tipped professions, living off their tips, subjects them to the absolute worst sexual harassment of any industry in the United States, because they must tolerate whatever a customer might do to them, however they may touch them or treat them or talk to them. So the entire system of living off tips, in our opinion, is flawed, is inequitable, creates a horrible system of gender inequity, but it's based on this incredible lobbying power of a trade lobby that's essentially gotten away with doing exactly what your callers have said, essentially saying we shouldn't have to pay our own workers' wages because you should.
All right, and here's another comment that sort of dovetails from Natasha, who writes on Facebook, on our Facebook page, "I really don't understand tipping. A restaurant where the average meal costs $50 assesses a gratuity, but the local Jack-in-the-Box doesn't? What's the difference? Both places probably have hardworking Latinos in the kitchen." Here's Doug from Orinda, who says, "Why not just raise the prices of food rather than having a separate charge that's the equivalent of my baggage check charge with the airlines? People will see the 20% charge as excessive if their service and food has been bad. You should be more willing to take charges off the bill if service and food has been poor." Thad Volger, comment on that?
I think that's a really intelligent comment. I think that all the comments today are great to hear, and I love the spirit of the conversation. The restaurant business is the only industry where labor, all labor, is not incorporated into the base charge. If I use any other service, a mechanic, it's not an arbitrary decision on my part how much that person's labor is worth. I think in the long run, I think Doug and Jeff were their names, that recommend that you just build it into the cost of the meal and leave it at that. I think in the long run, that's where we would like to go. It seemed like a huge step to, it's such a competitive town and people are constantly comparing the price of food. And this seemed like an intermediary step in that direction. But I totally agree that restaurants should ultimately be like any other service, any other good. And it's the responsibility of the proprietor to price so that all of his costs or her costs are covered by the cost of the goods.
And let me go back to Gwyneth Borden, who again is executive director of the Golden Gate Restaurant Association. And,
which is different than the NRA.
Well, actually, I'd like to hear from you to respond to Sarah's point about the industry fighting to make customers pay.
You know, the NRA has a different stance. We're here in California. I mean, San Francisco minimum wage is $10.74. And while it is true that for many in the industry, with the increase of the minimum wage, they would have liked to have seen some sort of carve out that started where we are today and kept increasing with CPI as opposed to, going higher. It's a completely different mindset here. I mean, it's true that there's a different situation in a full-service restaurant versus a non-full-service restaurant, but in those cases, those people don't make enough money to be considered tip workers in the traditional sense of what people are talking about. So in a service charge model, I mean, that primarily works well for a full-service establishment. It's worked well usually for super higher-end establishments. It's a lot harder to institute such a thing at a establishment that is a lower price denominator. And again, it goes back to, you know, what I said before and what that's pointed to. People have an expectation about a cost of food, a bowl of soup or something. When you're talking about your more casual, inexpensive places, people have in their mind how much money they should be paying. And as much as people say they want to have control over their tips, they also vote with their pocketbook. And when prices go what they believe to be too high, even if you're talking about local sustainable agriculture and you're talking about paying people really well, they still choose otherwise. I mean, all the studies that have ever been done about elasticity of price has always shown that dining out is the number one area that is impacted by price increases. It's actually interesting because on the ballot here in San Francisco, there's a sugary beverage tax, and the whole premise of the sugary beverage tax is that by increasing the prices of sugary beverages, that it will decrease consumption. We saw that with the cigarette tax. It is true that all those studies that talk about that correlation say that the highest area that's also affected by increase in price is dining out. So, I mean, there are concerns because, you know, people want to, it's always going to be cheaper to cook at home, quite frankly. It will always be cheaper to cook at home. And the competition in the restaurant industry is not just cooking at home, but it's now Walgreens and CVS and everybody who's gotten to the quick serve food grab-and-go business who have different economies of scales and supply chains and can afford to do things more cheaply. So, I mean, we could talk about the real cost of food and you know, that would, you know, and how we would reimagine the overall industry so the burden of tipping or not tipping or whatever wouldn't have to be on the consumer. But that's a much longer, larger customer and societal education project.
Well, I want to bring in more of our callers. Let me go first to a couple of your emails. Mike from Belmont writes, in Japan, tipping is really not done. The staff in the restaurant are treated and view themselves as professionals and are appropriately compensated. The experience of dining out is so much more pleasant. You pay your bill and you leave. I left a tip once and the staff chased me out to alert me to my forgotten money. And Carice in Palo Alto says, I confess I often tip 20%. I know there are those who don't tip a reasonable amount. If they were mandating 15%, I might go along. But to go to 20%, the tip you give when you're happy is unreasonable and would keep me away from those restaurants. If you're going to do 20%, you may want to be sure it's region-wide or you'll drive people away from the places that push the 20% rule. And Richard from San Francisco says, I spent 3 or 4 weeks in Europe every year, and I find that the service there is as good as here. My experience has been the tips reflect the attractiveness of the server as much as the quality of the service. The best restaurants serve customers as a team. Rewarding the team makes more sense to me. I hope this catches on. We'll go to more callers. Laura, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Just a quick comment. I co-own a catering business in San Francisco, and we can't hire a good dishwasher for less than $15 an hour. So I just wanted to point out that I don't know how, with virtually zero unemployment, anyone is able to hire someone below this, not quite living wage, but, you know, we certainly have seen a spike. And, you can't get good staff without paying them. That's all I've got.
All right. I thank you for that comment. Appreciate hearing from you. And we'll hear next from Daniel. You're on. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm a server in San Francisco, and I want to say that I really admire what that is doing. Some of my favorite people in the world are cooks and dishwashers and people that I've worked with for my entire career. That said, I am in my profession to make the money that I do. I am a professional. I study hard. I work hard, and I provide excellent service for which I'm really well compensated. If that were to be taken away from me or divided up, I would simply find a different industry, and so that begs the question, what happens to the level of service at that point?
Okay, it's an important question. I want to dovetail it with an online comment from a listener named Ben and get your response to that, if I may. Ben writes, I was a waiter for many years, and the system seemed to work fine. Credit card transactions have already eliminated the two different tax situations, and if you ask any chef, they would tell you they would never be able to deal with the stress, annoyance, and frustration of working in the front of the house. Waiters have to show up looking and acting professional, which costs a lot of money. Where's the incentive for people to be a waiter? Restaurant owners, better tread carefully, because I have seen how difficult it is to find, hire, and train quality wait staff. Without the monetary incentive, you'll find a lot less people willing to please the ever more demanding, yelping customers, and that can break a restaurant. Of course, I said before, there's also a dearth of cooks and chefs, but you want to comment that?
Yeah, I think it's a really intelligent comment. I think that's a risk we're taking. To reiterate, we're not disincentivizing front of the house employees. The structure of the tip pool looks will look very similar. And to the comment about taxation, there's a great deal of tax being avoided still. The restaurant is a gray market economy, and things being paid on a credit card does not ensure that they're declared. People are still not declaring all of their tips, and this is actually the only way to ensure that they are.
Another listener writes, Gwyneth Borden, why not price the good or service you sell properly so you can pay your employees and other business expenses, you know, like real businesses do? When I go to Nordstrom's, I don't have a service charge for the clerk who helps me. I don't tip my mechanic or plumber or electrician or grocery store clerk or et cetera, et cetera. If a restaurant is a business, act like it.
I totally agree.
People tip mechanics. Right. I tip a lot of delivery people. I mean, maybe I'm just more generous than other people, but there are a lot of industries where not only people get tips or they get commissions for the work they do. Again, people are paying right now greater than the minimum wage, and in most cases greater than what the $15 minimum wage will be. I mean, there is still an issue, though, of the difference between what people make in the front and the back of the house. And again, if people are saying we're willing, if restaurants, you know, indicate that they are great actors and that makes their, you know, sandwich $25, if people want to say, yes, we're willing to support that, restaurants would absolutely do that. I mean, again, it goes back to there is a bias, and it gets even more complicated. And when you talk about ethnic restaurants, it gets even more biased when you as you go into different areas of different kinds of food. So I think it's I think it's nice to believe that everybody you know, that everybody will pay whatever the price of food really is, but the indication is that, you know, Walmart's the number one seller of groceries in the country, and that indicates to me that that's not, that people don't prioritize how people are paid.
And let me go back to you, Sarah Jayaraman. And Elizabeth from Berkeley writes, why don't restaurant owners compensate the kitchen staff in part based on volume, if this is just a way to shift wage responsibility from owner to front of house staff?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are other professions that tip, but this is the only industry that then says, okay, so we get to pay less because you tip, right? That's the point. And I guess all of the comments are interesting for me, coming from somebody who has fought this issue in so many states outside of California, because so many of the fears that are brought up about service going down or you know, people not having discretion are the same fears that are used to keep wages as low as $2.13 an hour. And I will say again, California is the largest and one of the fastest growing restaurant industries in the country. San Francisco's restaurant industry is booming. Service is fantastic in San Francisco. So if any of these fears were true, that service would be diminished or any of these problems would occur, then you would have seen that in the difference between California and San Francisco and states that pay as little as $2.13 an hour. But in fact, the opposite is true. Service, I think, I live here, San Francisco has better service than most of the country, better restaurants. You know, all of the opposite I have found to be true, and the data shows to be true. So I guess, you know, the real problem with this whole industry saying somebody else should pay our workers rather than us is diminishing these workers as the professionals that they are, because it is so different than every other profession in the United States. And as long as we allow other states to get away with a 213 or a 3-something as it is in Arizona, we are at risk of losing that here in California as well. So I will say again, you know, it's not that I'm arguing against tips. I think at this moment, tips are absolutely necessary on top of a $15 wage to get people closer to a livable wage, to a professional wage. But I agree with everybody who's saying that ultimately this industry really needs to be paying for itself, paying its own workers as the professionals that they are.
And again, Saru Jayaraman is the author of Behind the Kitchen Door. Let me bring more of our callers in here, and let's go to Jane in Corte Madera. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Thank you very much. This is a great program. You know, a lot of people, most people don't like to complain. So if they get bad service or they don't like their food, they take it out on the server. And then the owner or the manager or the kitchen never hears why the customer was dissatisfied. So I think it's a good idea, to include the tip on the tab. And also, may I just take 1 second here, when you talk about water, all those restaurant people listening to this, please stop serving water automatically and have on your menu, a lot of restaurants are doing it now, water served upon request. Because when a glass appears on a table and never gets filled, it still gets washed, and whatever water is left gets dumped.
Good caveat in this age of the drought, although I must say, when I have lousy food, I immediately say, I know it's not your fault, to the server. But people should make that distinction, too. Thank you, Jane. Let me go to another caller, and that's you, William. Hi, you're on.
Hi. So I'd like to throw it out there, an example in a different industry that, you know, Uber, who's a company that's out there and a lot of people use every single day, Uber includes and tells all the clients that it includes a 20% tip on the fare. The driver never sees that tip. It's never even disclosed that that tip is there. It doesn't even show when the driver gets paid. And I've also worked in restaurants where there was a price fix menu, and the way they would add a certain percentage, 20%, and it would get shared between the entire wait staff and back of the house. And since it was price fixed, when you sat down, the food was already sold. The money that we were making on tips was merely, you know, you had to upsell on drinks and upsell on wines, And that was very much the knowledge of the server and how good he was at selling that, determined that. But, you know, food runners and hostesses and bartenders were making the exact same percentage out of every single tip that came in on that 20%. So that was incredibly unfair. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
I'm glad you did, William, and I thank you for the call. And we'll go right to another caller who's been waiting patiently. John, thank you for waiting. You're on.
Good morning. Thank you. This is a great show. I started out at 21 years of age as a dishwasher in Las Vegas. Went to a busboy, then to a waiter, and then I became the head bartender. And it took me years to develop a clientele, to bring customers back. And, you know, and my recommendation to any kitchen staff, if they're not getting paid enough, to do what I did, work their way with, you know, where the money is better. And my interpretation of the owners that wanted to want to change this is they want to pay their kitchen staff more from the tips of the waiters and the bartenders. Why don't they pay them out of their own profits? Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that. Thad, you want to address that?
I'm breaking even this year. I'm not profitable. I think it's I can only speak to my personal experience. I think there's no right or wrong here. I think we're looking to get to a point. I think a big part of why there is so much confusion and opinion is that the restaurant business is sort of on an island unto itself, and it does things differently. And as an owner, my greatest aspiration is to make it more like other industries so that people can judge restaurants more objectively and by the same criteria they judge, other experiences, other ways in which they spend their money. So I perceive this as a step in that direction, and I definitely recognize all of the ways it can be perceived and misperceived. I mean, I think everyone's point is valid, and I look forward to seeing how it shakes out.
Well, we've got a caller here from New York City. Heidi, a small restaurant owner, join us. You're on.
Yes, hi. I'm a New York City restaurant owner, and I don't know if the market's vastly different here than elsewhere, but I would echo what your restaurant owner there has just said in that, there are nights when my waiters or my kitchen staff could make more money than I do on a given day. It's a struggle, and for most small business owners I know in the city, that's true, especially in the restaurant industry. So it feels like a little bit of a vilification. I would love to pay my staff, especially in the kitchen, higher wage, but I would have to raise my prices, and then I would go out of business. If there's a mandatory living wage, and we're all obligated to abide by that, that would be a wonderful thing for me because we'd all equally raise our prices and customers would have to, none of these small businesses are millionaires. You know, I'm doing alternate side of the street parking right now. We're just making it. So, I think we all want the best for our employees. I think to think that there is some kind of, just greediness among the owners is really a terrible thing. You know, small businesses are struggling. The owners are struggling just like their employees are.
Heidi, appreciate your perspective and thank you for your call. And here's Mark.
Can I say something to that point, too? I mean, I think what I've experienced with my restaurateurs is that they all got into the hospitality business out of passion, right? They had a passion for food and they want to feed people and they want to create a place where people can celebrate, in some cases, their culture or the best moments of their lives. It's people get in this industry because they really want to feed and serve and commune with people, not because they want to be punitive or nasty to their workers. I mean, they need their workers to work with them. And it's like what I said earlier, it's a symbiotic relationship between the front and the back of the house. Because if the food is bad, no one's coming in to tip the server. And I think that we just have to think of it in that regard. You know, are there challenges because of the fact that people have a perception of what food should cost and maybe food is undervalued? Yes. I mean, we have a huge education that needs to happen in this country around the true cost of food and how you support local producers and support businesses that make the choice to support local. So I just think that, it's very easy to say flippantly to raise prices when on the other side, people are living very much at the margins, and doing so does mean the difference between them being open and not.
And I want to read
I just have to weigh in. This is Saru. I couldn't agree more that small businesses, are definitely struggling and living at the margins. I do have to say, though, that these standards don't pop out of air, right? The National Restaurant Association has been the one to set the standards in this industry. They have been the one to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to keep wages as low as they are. And small businesses basically are at the mercy of following those standards, and that's totally understood. But if we as a society don't actually... This is not just about consumers being educated and being willing to pay more. This is actually about who sets the laws, who sets the standards in the United States, in California, in every legislature. It is the National Restaurant Association that has the most power, and not surprisingly, as a result, the restaurant industry is still the employer of the largest number of minimum wage workers in the United States, is the largest poverty employer in the United States. In fact, every year, the U.S. Department of Labor puts out a list of the 10 lowest-paying jobs in America, and every year, 7 of the 10 are restaurant jobs. It's the second largest, absolute fastest-growing industry in America, and the absolute lowest-paying employer.
All right, it's the other NRA that we're talking about here, just so nobody gets confused. We got some. I want to get another caller on here from the back of the house, but we're flat out of time. Let me just read one more email here. Here's my only issue: as a man who's waited many tables, it becomes clear when you bring 6 Sprite refills to a table at a grand total of $2.50, and bring a single cocktail to a table at $12, that you're getting paid in a completely bizarre way. I'm for restaurants figuring out how much it costs to buy, prepare, and serve food, where workers get a decent wage, and be done with it. Well, on that note, I want to thank all of our guests. Thanks to Thad Volger. Thanks to Louis Riviere, who we talked to earlier. And thanks to Gwyneth Borden and Saru Jayaraman. And thanks to you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you. And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, another hour. We're going to talk about the initiative process in the hour ahead. So stay tuned for that for all of us here at KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.